We have this little saying that I think drives it home for people. A mistake made once is a mistake. A mistake made twice is a choice. So I think ownership is just, it's acknowledging the choices that you've been making in life and then deciding whether or not you'd like to continue making them in the future or whether you'd like to make some better ones. And I think that's kind of where everything starts and ends on the ownership front.
This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Own It Show. I'm your host, Justin Rothling-Schofer, and wherever you're listening to this, whether it's the car, whether you're working out, whether you're walking your dog, or whether you're in the airport or somewhere else, I hope you are well. I know we've been talking a lot lately about really how do we create this life by design? How do we create this life of intentionality and realize life in an elevated way? We've all been going down these roads of trying to find levels of perfection. We've all been going down these roads of trying to find the perfect thing. And in reality, that doesn't exist. In reality, we're searching for the invisible man. We're searching for the wind that never actually shows up because we're digging in the wrong places. And if you're new to the Own It Show, we tell stories of people who have really made ownership theirs and found a new way of doing life and found it in a different way. We say success is different here. And you can go back and take a look at the 250 episodes prior. There's some of me speaking just of myself. There's some with guests, but hopefully you can like, share, or comment on them so they can reach other people. And today I've got a really great friend that's come on, and I'm excited for you to hear his story. I'm excited for you to hear a little bit more about how he serves people, but also how he's able to fuel himself in order to do that. Because this is a guy who's really been able to live in ownership, a guy that has really transformed his entire life just because of his obedience to what he knows that he's called to. And so Sathya Sam, you've probably seen him on social media. You've probably seen him on YouTube or some other form of content, and the work he is doing, helping to alleviate porn addictions in men in a really purposeful and intentional way, has just been nothing but captivating. But not only that, he's an amazing person, an amazing human being. And so, Sathya, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man. It's great to be here.
It was awesome getting to spend some in-person time with you up in northern Texas not a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, man, thoroughly enjoyed that. And Texas feels a little bit less familiar for me as an Ontarian, but I don't know. I thought as an Albertan, you might be feeling right at home.
I'll tell you what, I've told this story on a podcast before, but as I was sitting there in northern Texas with a Tesla that has no charging stations and on my way back, to the airport, actually ran out of charge. It was unbelievable. So as you talked about it, Texas, North Texas specifically, is extremely unfamiliar territory to me too.
Too funny, man.
Oh, it was unbelievable. But Sathya, I'd love you to kind of just talk to our audience and tell them a little bit about who you are and what really drove you down this road of serving men in the way in which you are now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, nobody gets into helping guys with porn addiction because it's the thing they dreamt about as a little boy. I certainly had better ambitions, like, you know, becoming a pizza delivery boy. That was my big dream when I was 5 years old. but you know what? I had my own story. That's just the honest truth. I got exposed to pornography at a young age. I was 11 years old. It happened in the computer lab of my Christian school. I mean, I had a good upbringing. I wasn't some troubled kid or growing up in the projects, but even in middle class suburbia in Western Canada, I got exposed, and that was sort of the beginning of a 15-year journey. At the absolute worst part of it, I truly was addicted. I mean, I planned my days around it. I declined social commitments in favor of it, and basically, most of my life, in one way, shape, or form, revolved around pornography. And I always told myself I could stop when I needed to, like every addict tells themselves. And when that time finally came, I couldn't. I was totally hooked, totally gripped by it. And no matter how much willpower I mustered up, it really got me back to square one, eventually, one way or another. And that was when I realized I needed help. And that's where I think my life really started to change, because I realized that if I continued down the path I was gone, I was going to end up somewhere I didn't want to be. And so that's where everything really changed for me, where I really started to take ownership of my life, started to figure out even just what causes behavior, good or bad, and tried to become a better person, you know, like really did the deep inner work. And we've been fortunate. I mean, I've been clean of pornography for 7.5 years now, and I've been fortunate to help hundreds of men around the world, young and far, rich and poor, near and far rather, young and old, rich and poor, get free of pornography as well. And a lot of it's centered around, you know, the same principles that helped me. And I love, you know, what you guys stand for here, which is a huge principled approach with science and research backing it and some biblical concepts undergirding it. But there's also an understanding of an individuality that comes with any kind of really wellness journey. And the same would be true of our approach as well. So that's my story and kind of what I'm up to in a little bit of a nutshell.
It's so outstanding. And with all the men that you help and all the people that you kind of lean in with, what is the similarity or the underlying factor that oftentimes you start to see kind of take a, like really stand out, is be like, oh, this is a commonality that a lot of these men are having?
Yeah. So we were primarily with high performing men. So athletes, entrepreneurs, executives, that kind of thing. And by far the most common thing they all seem to share in their stories is a lack of self-awareness. That seems to be the thing that really uncorks a lot of their recovery and a lot of their breakthrough. We have a little motto, which is that if you are not aware, it cannot be repaired. So a lot of people come to us addicted. They know they need help, and they just think that there's going to be some quick gimmicky fix that will, you know, fix it all for them and they're good to go, the silver bullet. And you and I both know that's not how it works in any area of wellness, certainly not in addiction. So when we start delving into self-awareness, we start to give some tools on how to really cultivate an understanding of the thoughts, the feelings, the beliefs, and the paradigms that are governing our decision-making process. When people start to tap into that, it's a little bit unfamiliar at first, maybe even a little bit scary. But as they start to get clearer there, as you can start to look at your inner life with greater resolution, suddenly the solutions become really obvious. So I think that's the big thing. You know, the nature of, you and I are both entrepreneurs. The nature of our wiring is there's a problem. Let's fix it in the most effective and the most efficient way possible. And typically we gravitate towards the solution of most convenience. And what we're trying to do with the people we work with, especially if we can see that self-awareness is a blind spot, we kind of evaluate three areas, and self-awareness is one of them. If self-awareness is the blind spot, then our goal is actually to get as much clarity on the problem itself, because the more clearly you can define the problem, the more obvious the solution is.
When you talk about self-awareness can be such a abstract thing for a lot of people. You got to be more self-aware, or you got to think about yourself in a different way. And I've heard that from such a young age, of being more aware as to what's happening around you and all of these different things that are said. But what does it actually mean to be self-aware? Because I think everybody listening would be like, oh, I'm a pretty self-aware person. I like to think I am. But yeah, what does that actually mean in some areas? Because even me, and I'm putting you on the spot, but I would even think even you, there's still areas that I'm not very self-aware in, and 100%. There's always growth to be had. And he who continues to seek will continue to learn. And so that's kind of the mentality that I take, is I always want to figure out what I'm not aware of so that I can ultimately correct it. And so, or at least work on it and identify the opportunity. But what would you say self-awareness is, and where do you start to really find where those gaps or holes exist?
Yeah, let me illustrate this with an example. So let's say you got a guy, he's been working on a project at work for, you know, a couple months, and the big day comes. It's time to, you know, it's time to unveil the new product or launch something new. It's launch day, and everything in his life has been leading up to this moment. So the day comes and he's feeling the stress of it. You know, he's done his best to prepare. Doesn't change the fact that it's still pretty stressful. So he's feeling the stress of it. He goes through the day, he makes it through, you know, the presentation, the launch meetings, all that kind of stuff. And about halfway through, he's starting to feel it. Like he is very aware of like, whoa, I'm pushing myself here. Like I'm really running on fumes, but it's launch day. So obviously he's going to push through. So the day ends, it still wraps up around 5 o'clock like it normally does. He goes home and his wife is there to greet him at the door. Hey, sweetheart, welcome home. How did everything go? Can't wait to hear about it. I'm cooking dinner. The kids are just playing. Go kick your feet up. Food will be ready in a bit. So he goes, he kicks his feet up. The kids are, you know, running around playing. And as much as he would love to play with them, he is tired. He is like numbing out a little bit. It's been a long day. They eat dinner together. The kids go play again. The wife puts the kids to bed, comes back into the living room, sees him, you know, with his feet back up. He's just watching a bit of TV and says, hey, you know, I'm going to bed. I'm pretty tired. If you want to join me, you know, I'll be up for a little bit. I would love to hear about how things went. He says, yeah, no problem. I'll be there in a couple minutes. Commercial break comes on the TV show. He pops out his phone. He starts scrolling around. He's on Instagram, you know, sees somebody wearing kind of skimpy clothing, clicks on their profile. One thing leads to another. And 10 minutes later, he's had a slip. So if I were to ask you, Justin, you know, what should this guy have done differently to prevent that slip? Well, 9 times out of 10, what most people say is, duh, he should have gone to bed when his wife was giving him the open invitation to just go call it a night. He wouldn't have been in the environment and whatever, whatever. But actually what he should have done is learn how to manage his stress better, either in the moment of that product launch or even in the days leading up to it. So when you lack self-awareness, what happens is your scope is narrowed. It's not, there's no such thing as having no self-awareness. Everybody has self-awareness. It's just a question of how much of it do you have. Narrow self-awareness gets very dialed in on external circumstances and recent events. It's in this kind of, you're in this constant reactionary kind of state. But when somebody is recovering from porn addiction and they're actually expanding their self-awareness, what happens is they begin to gain an understanding of things ahead of stream. So the person encounters stress and they say, you know what, even though I could handle this stressful situation or whatever it is I'm feeling, I know that if it persists long enough, I'm going to be more prone to have a slip. So I'm going to do something about it now. So self-awareness is about expanding that range of awareness of the thoughts, feelings, paradigms, and beliefs that drive our behavior. And as you stated, this is learned. So you and I have put in work to cultivate self-awareness in, you know, respective areas of our lives. There's still work to be done in those areas and in others. So again, it's across a spectrum. It's not like you have it or you don't, or you're really good at it or you're really bad at it. It's just that we grow and we get better and better at it as time goes on.
It's such a great point to be able to look at is everybody is self-aware, but there's just a sliding scale as to where you're at. And
exactly,
I think that really resonates for a lot of people and allows it to kind of step in a big, big way. When you started on your journey and became more self-aware about where you needed to go, what was, I think, the biggest step that you needed to really start to admit that, hey, yeah, there's some gaps here that I need to lean into, or some opportunity that I want to kind of harness and create a little bit of change in?
Without a shadow of a doubt, it was confronting emotions. So I grew up in an Indian household. Dad was a pastor. Both of those elements of my upbringing, I would say, negatively contributed to my emotional awareness. And then to sort of further it, in high school, I lost 3 friends to suicide, including one friend that was particularly close. So everything I learned in my upbringing was basically numb. That's how you survive the hard things in life. Let's not have difficult conversations. Let's not talk about what you're feeling, because that's a little bit too messy. Let's find some way to cope and continue on. And I would say pornography was part of my coping cocktail, if I can put it that way. It wasn't the only thing in the mix. It was probably the most prominent. So an interesting thing really happened when I actually was willing to delve a little bit deeper under the surface. It's not like I uncorked this huge mix and mess of emotions and I, you know, cried for days on end and whatever. What I realized is actually how often emotions were at play in my decision-making, in the way I was interacting with people. But my failure to understand it did 2 things. Number one, it did leave me a little bit numb. And so when you lack that information about your own state, then you can't respond and make better decisions for the future, right? So if I'm in a stressful state, but I'm denying the stress, or I'm feeling really discouraged about a project, but I'm denying the discouragement, well, the problem is the discouragement is still there. I've just basically suffocated that part of my inner world and inner life. And sure, maybe it means I can push on and get things done, But then when I have to go home and talk to my wife and she asks me, how's your day going or how was it? And I say, oh, my day was fine. She says, no, how was it really? And I'm like, yeah, it was really fine. You know, I just like did stuff I always do. Now the other areas of my life start to suffer. And I lack that meaningful relationship because I'm not able to share openly. And that was the thing I realized. I was mid-20s and I thought, man, I have all these people that love and adore me. They don't know me. And the reason they don't know me is because I haven't given myself a chance to be known. There's a British journalist named Johan Hari. He did a viral TED talk on addiction about, and I think it was 2016 or 2017. His thesis from, you know, his summation of the research and his own investigative journalism was that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. And whether you're talking about substance abuse or behavioral or process addiction, you're dealing with generally some of the same fundamental elements. In this case, it's very often a lack of disconnection. And it starts at an inner individual level. People are disconnected from their inner world. They cannot articulate what's going on within. But secondarily, they then lack connection with people in their lives, their loved ones, their family, their friends, or whatever. And that lack of connection, that lack of actual intimate knowledge of one another leads to worse behavior. It leads to loneliness, which compounds things. It leads to a sense of disconnect. And in our case, with our client base who are addicted to pornography, pornography becomes fast food intimacy. It becomes that sense of pseudo or fake connection. And that was certainly my case as well growing up. So by far the biggest thing was really giving myself permission to confront emotions. And then on the other side, realizing they're actually not as bad as I thought. They're not that scary. And they kind of come and go in waves, you know, and if you just let the wave pass through, it's really not a big deal and you're better off on the other side of it.
It's so powerful. I want you to kind of dive deeper into this power of connection when it comes to sobriety, when it comes to feeling fulfilled in that area. And do you now make that a daily part of your routine and a daily part of like your intentional life by design?
Yeah, 100%. I would say there's different ways, and this is where the individuality comes in, but you have to find ways on a regular basis to form meaningful connection. I mean, even everything that we do in our program is centered around community. There's tons of group coaching, very engaged online community for all of those reasons. The more that you're connecting with people, the better. I have a couple rhythms in place for me. So the first thing is my wife and I have two contact points throughout the week. One is a weekly date night, and then we always have Saturday morning brunch together. And we don't talk shop, we don't talk about plans. We're just getting to know it. Like, it's literally just, how are you doing? Like, how's your heart? How are you doing emotionally? And for me, again, like high stress life, very, very nice to just have a safe outlet that I can rely on week after week that's always there. On a more daily level, for me, everything starts and ends in my relationship with God. And I often, even in my recovery journey, I found that, you know, I could talk to professionals. I did see therapists. I saw different specialists. I started to form more meaningful relationships in my communities and my friend circles. They were all awesome. But what I found is that when at some point there was a limit, you know, like with my therapist, there was a time limit, but also the nature of a professional relationship is just not the same as having a brother or a close friend that you can really share with intimately and personally and share your life with. Right. And even that part is great, but that has limitations as well. And what I found is that God was the one thing I could rely on the most consistently, where there was no limitations to what he could handle. I could share everything and anything with him. And the accessibility was just there. You know, I could be on a plane and I could take a couple minutes and connect with God. And typically I would do that through journaling, which we can dive into if you want. But there's different ways to do it. But for me, that's what it's looked like. And I don't go a day without that connection point with God. Usually it's in the mornings. But those are some of my rhythms, on a more individual level. And then I'm also very intentional about plugging into communities. You just spoke at the mastermind that I'm a part of. We meet up in person 3 times a year, which is not a ton, but it's actually amazing. But then we have a Voxer chat. We're chatting in there every single day. I have other friends that I speak with at least on a weekly basis. And just a bunch of different things, trying to get different flavors of connection to keep that part of my area, you know, relatively healthy and well-rounded.
I love that. And I'd love you to kind of just share, like, what does a typical morning look like for you, Sethia, but also some non-negotiables over the course of your day that you need to make sure that you hit on to ensure that you're in a solid place to be able to thrive?
Yeah. So I'm up at the same time every day. I think that's just a necessity. The first hour of my day goes to God and my kind of self-care. Those things are intertwined. So usually it's a mixture of meditation, walking, and then reading the scripture. That's always very important for me. And I'll usually do a little review of my vision board at that point also. And then for 2 hours, 6:30 to 8:30, I'm in deep work. So deep work is like, there's no notifications, there's no nothing. I am just like locked in on whatever my main projects are. I have the world's most boring Trello board with just the list of the things I need to work on so that there's like literally no distraction. And then I kind of start my day. So I don't check my phone until I've been up for at least 3.5 hours. And if I don't need to, I usually won't check it until lunchtime. My brain is just better. I'm better. And then usually I'll do interviews like this in the morning. I think we're interviewing in the afternoon here, but typically I'll do, you know, all my media stuff in the morning.
Gave us a pass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can always make an exception. And then lunchtime is when I work out. So Monday to Friday, I'm always at the gym. I lift weights, I do mobility, and I usually meditate after I work out as well, just a good way to kind of calm me down. And then we do all our team meetings in the afternoon. There's some research out there that shows that a majority of heart attacks happen Monday morning, and that a lot of the anticipation of meetings in the mornings can be really stress inducing. So we try to do everything in the afternoon, and then I'll wrap up the day. I always wrap up the day with a walk. I find it super helpful. It kind of like simulates a commute, so I can just kind of transition my brain into whatever I'm doing for the evening. Those are the main things that really keep me dialed in. The other thing I do that I think is personally my own secret sauce that people don't take me seriously on, but I really do mean it, is I fast 24 hours every single week, usually from sundown on Saturday to sundown on Sunday. And that is incredibly resetting for me. Physically, the research is definitely starting to amount that there's some good benefits of fasting. Just from like a detoxification purposes, you would probably be able to comment on that more than me. I also do it spiritually. I find it really grounding, and I really couple that with prayer. So when I'm hungry, I use that as a reminder to pray into something that, you know, maybe I'm focused on in this particular season. And that becomes I'll travel, I'll do whatever. I almost never miss that 24-hour fasting period. It's become very centering for me over the years. So those are some of the things that I have kind of in my rhythms.
I love it. And it's so unique because, and this is why I love to ask people who are successful and have found this rhythm for them is Sethia has a lot of his purposeful work in the morning. And there's very few people we've heard that say that. A lot of them are going to work out. A lot of them are going to get certain them time in. It's getting the kids off, whatever it be. But there's this deep, purposeful time where he's able to really harness the power of his creativity and his mind to be able to get that going. So I absolutely love that. Sethia, as you've kind of leaned in and have executed and lived in this life of what we call ownership, what would you say is your definition of ownership?
Oh, that's a great question. I think you probably can't talk about ownership without responsibility. And I think for me, ownership is really just taking responsibility for what is rightfully yours. One of the things that we have to really work with our clients is like a victim mindset. It would be so easy to blame, you know, for me, the person who exposed me to pornography when I was 11 years old, it'd be so easy to blame life circumstances, my dad is a pastor or whatever. Nothing really changed in this arena of my life until I started to realize I'm responsible. I've been the one watching all these years, choosing to watch it day in, day out. This is the life I built for myself, and I'm going to do something about it. And we have this little saying that I think drives it home for people. A mistake made once is a mistake. A mistake made twice is a choice. So I think ownership is just, it's acknowledging the choices that you've been making in life, and then deciding whether or not you'd like to continue making them in the future or whether you'd like to make some better ones. And I think that's kind of where everything starts and ends on the ownership front.
I love that. A mistake made once is a mistake. A mistake made twice is a choice. It's so true. We're empowered by our decisions. And oftentimes I think we miss a major step in the decision-making curve and pass the buck off on somebody else. And when we do that, in that victim mindset or that victim mentality, it just puts us in a dark place that doesn't allow us to step in and empower us, but rather hold us back in a lot of ways. So that's really, really special. Where can people find you? Where can people tap into you, your resources, and just more of your content and what it is that you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. We have a daily podcast called Unleash the Man Within. So I think for any of your listeners who are maybe looking for more resources along the lines of healthy sexuality, getting free of a porn addiction or something related, that would be a great resource. There's over 500 episodes right now at the time of this recording. So we've talked about just everything under the sun as far as this stuff kind of goes. We're also super active on Instagram. The handle there is Sathya Me Sam. Maybe you can put that in the show notes so people don't have to type it out. But yeah, super active there. We've been growing pretty quickly. And I think if people are looking for some more nuggets and they want to throw a little more positivity in their Instagram feed, something that's going to help them towards their goals, that would be a great place to start as well.
Outstanding. Guys, I really encourage you to lean out and step into that and to take Sathya up on some of those resources, because he's just a wealth of knowledge, but also just an amazing person that knows what his calling is, know what he's on fire for. And as we say here, God doesn't set bushes on fire. He sets people on fire. And the more that we can get around those types of people, the better it can become. So as you go forward, we know self-awareness is something that we're constantly looking for, constantly seeking. And how do we get more of it? Well, we have to be willing to look internally and identify where there's areas to repair. Understand that we need to lean into some of these ways and that growth is a never-ending tool. Growth is something that we will constantly be after, that we will constantly be doing, and that there's no level of perfection. We'll never be perfect. We will never be at the right space. It's just a constant journey that you're going to love yourself on. You're going to take a 30,000 foot approach and be able to identify where this road can actually start turning for you, realizing that there isn't one way to do it, but rather a personalized way. I want you also to take a look at something that Sathya said, which is sobriety's connection. Come back to where are you able to get your connection from? Who are you connecting with? Where are you connecting? In what way are you connecting? And being willing to take responsibility for something that is righteously yours, being willing to truly lean in and say, hey, when I own that, when I can truly be in this ownership space, this ownership mentality and steward what's around me, that's when things come alive. Because mistakes made once are mistakes, but mistakes made twice are a choice. And so as we move forward, we know success is different. So we have to choose to be different. We'll see you guys next week.